You're listening to the Table Talk podcast, brought to you by the team at Food Matters. Welcome to the Table Talk podcast, brought to you by Food Matters, and this week in partnership with Cargill. In these podcasts, we explore a huge range of crucial issues and exciting developments in the food industry, with brilliant guests drawn from all areas of expertise. I'm Stefan Gates. I'm a TV presenter and writer specializing in food and science. And this podcast is all about meat alternatives. It's a particular favorite subject of mine. And we're joined by Matthias Bordeaux, Marketing Manager, Texturizers.
Hello.
Beatrice Felker, Technical Account Manager.
Hello.
Hannah Keenan, Business Development Manager, Infuse.
Hello.
And Susanna Van Beveren, Application Specialist, Meat and Meat Alternatives.
Hello.
So let's dive straight into it. Matthias, how promising is this market for manufacturers?
Well, there's no doubt it's very promising and it's going to continue growing. The difficulty is really to predict at which rate, right? Some of the predictions we've seen put global value growth at 20% for the next 5 years. And so that's a compound annual growth rate, meaning that every year in the next 5 years, the expectation is that the market would grow in terms of value by 20%.
That's huge, isn't it?
It is. It is. Now, that puts the share of meat alternatives versus, let's say, real processed meat to about below 5%, somewhere between 3 and 4% in 5 years from now. So whether that's big or small, I'm not too sure. Now, the markets where that share will be the highest are undoubtedly Europe and the US, where we do see that the volume for real processed meat is pretty much flat, and the expectations also for it to grow in the future are that it's going to be flat. So that's where that share of meat alternatives is definitely going to be the biggest and is going to grow the fastest. Now, of course, we know that predictions have just become a little bit harder to make with COVID-19. But in fact, if we look at some studies on the short-term impact of the pandemic and on demand of vegan and vegetarian products in general and on meat alternatives in particular, we do not see a negative impact on volumes. And in fact, there's some data suggesting that the pandemic has increased consumer interest in plant-based and vegan and vegetarian products, and especially meat alternatives, possibly due to an increased consumer awareness on health and sustainability. What's really difficult in all of this is that, honestly, we do not really understand yet what the impact of so-called lab-grown meat could be, which makes the prediction even higher, even more difficult. But then, okay, what's sure? The growth is going to be there, and it's going to take some time before we're going to be referring to this meat alternative market as a mature market.
But still, I mean, 5% is of an enormous market is still quite large. But I guess let's think about the consumer that's buying this. Hannah, who is the meat alternative consumer? What drives their choices?
Yeah, so, well, clearly vegan and vegetarian products are no longer just consumed by vegan and vegetarians. In fact, there's lots of evidence that the overwhelming majority, possibly up to 90%, particularly in the UK, by some accounts, of vegan and vegetarian products are consumed by consumers who do not think of themselves as being vegan or vegetarian. So rather, it's the flexitarian consumer, in other words, the consumer that is making the conscious effort to reduce animal meat and protein consumption, that it's now...
I love a vegan burger myself.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, I'll often choose a vegan burger.
And there's so much choice out there as well now. So the consumer's really making that conscious effort to reduce animal meat and protein consumption. And it's now them that are driving these meat alternative products, in fact. So again, if we look to the UK, we have data that suggests 1 in 3 meat eaters have reduced their meat consumption, while just 3% of UK consumers view themselves as vegetarians. So that's really only 1% identifying themselves as vegans. the health benefits associated with these plant-based foods appear to be the biggest motivator for flexitarian consumers, and I myself would classify myself as one. So one of the studies we did at Cargill shows that almost 4 out of 10 of the European shoppers claim that plant-based foods are healthier than animal-based foods. Further research again suggests that environmental and ethical concerns play a role as well, a really important role. But these concerns are bigger drivers for becoming fully vegan or vegetarian. I think that most of today's consumers, the sustainability appeal also of these plant-based foods is secondary to the health halo. There's also just the curiosity, again, of consumers looking for something different. So a different eating experience, a different texture, something out of their daily norm. But that's more difficult to tap into because you really need to come up with new taste, new texture. And there, you really don't want them to be just a passing fad. You really want that to stick and become a more regular but go to alternative product. And that's risky to bring something completely new in terms of eating experiences. Most consumers are comparing meat alternative products to the original, I say in inverted commas, meat products of themselves.
So, I mean, this because it's a changing, you know, the fact that it's rapidly expanding means that it's a changing market all the time. So do you get loyalty amongst consumers?
Well, I think it's a bit difficult to talk about loyalty in this particular market at the moment because it's not that yet matured. In some countries, some brands have already established themselves pretty well on the shelves, and I'm sure you've seen them for yourself. And these brands do have repeat purchase, otherwise they wouldn't be there still. They wouldn't be able to stay on that aisle. However, there are other entrants and the choices are growing, both in terms of the offer of certain meat alternatives like the vegan burgers, which you've mentioned already, that are now becoming a basis of a variety of plant-based proteins and really leading the way there, from soy to wheat to various other proteins such as even beetroot. You know, there's a number of different proteins being really introduced in that sector at the moment for that particular product. But also, apart from the well-known vegan burgers or nuggets, which are basically a coarse ground reformed type of meat alternative that are hot consumed, we are actually moving to other types such as vegan sausages, vegan cold cuts, which are more emulsified type meat alternative products that can be consumed either hot or cold. So offering the consumer a bit more flexibility, a bit more choice. And it's this growing offer in terms of meat alternatives is it's really great for the consumers, and a lot of them are really curious and willing to give them a try. But then, of course, as a manufacturer, as a supplier also as well, you really want to have that first purchase, but moving more beyond that into a repeat purchase. And that's really the challenge in this market.
Now, Beatrice, what is, in your view, the biggest technical challenge of making a vegan burger?
I find that really interesting challenges, that which are even overlooked sometimes, are also the visual aspect and also the cooking behavior. So, Stefan, just let's imagine a typical burger patty. Then there you have the red flesh with the minced structure, and you will probably also see then white fat particles distributed in this flesh. So in terms of the visual appeal, those fat particles is really what the customer associates with a juicy experience. And that's also those visual aspects that they take care of when they make their buying decision on which product to choose from the shelf. So actually, this visual appeal is quite important. And then when they take the product home, they will prepare it in the same way as they will prepare the traditional meat burger. And so there, everyone would expect that during the frying in the pan, the fat melts and generates those juicy holes in the meat, you know?
So what products are used for that kind of thing today?
So you still see a lot of rapeseed oil and sunflower oil that is used. But actually, as I already explained, this cooking behavior when the fat is melting and you have before the weight particles and afterward it's those juicy holes. So to having this visual appeal and the right melting behavior, I would really recommend to that rather go to use a combination of different plant-based oils with together with some fats to get closer to the visual and the melting aspects of the typical animal fat. So typical alternatives that you could, for example, use would be then palm fat. But as we know that sustainability gets more and more important, especially for those flexitarian consumers, there's a growing trend to use then also sustainable options for palm oil, or to even go one step beyond and to use non-palm solutions. And that's why also at Cargill, we were just developing a palm-free product range. So this is a mixture of liquid oils and other plant-based fats that will meet the sustainability requirements and at the meantime will have similar functionality and a better nutritional profile than palm oil.
So is it an easy process? Do you just change from one animal-based fat source to another, and obviously preferably palm-free, a plant-based fat source?
An easy process. So, yeah, I wish I could say that it is easy. But, yeah, actually, I don't think that it's that easy. So, as you could imagine, you really need a lot of formulation experience also to understand the choice of the new alternative plant-based proteins that and how they are going to interact with all the other ingredients that you have currently in those meat alternatives. So, often our customers come to us with a wide array of different plant-based proteins that they would like to use. And as we just discussed, there are also specific expectations in terms of texture, visual aspects, then the melting and also the cooking behavior for the final food. So yeah, really having the right ingredient that could provide a solution is of course important. But equally important is also to have then the lab and the pilot capabilities to build really the tailor-made solution for our customers. And in addition to that, it's always a very plus to have technical knowledge that help to overcome challenges and to find different formulation options, to find the best solution.
So that's all about the visual and the cooking experience for the consumer. But of course, it also has to taste great. So what about the texture of the burger? Susanna, that's also very important and it's tricky to get right, I presume?
Yes. The texture and succulence are important as well as they significantly impact overall taste. People easily say, I don't like it, that doesn't taste very well. But what do they actually mean is that the texture is not okay. The burger, for example, is very dry and chewy, or it's on opposite, very soft and mushy. So besides appearance, also the firm bite, chewiness and the juiciness are challenging parameters significantly affecting the consumer acceptance. If we want to give plant-based burgers meat-like texture, we need to substitute ground meat by plant protein in texture form. And once this protein is hydrated, it gives typical bite of minced meat. For juiciness and the flavor release, it's also important how much the protein absorbs the water and how much water holds also during the heat treatment at manufacture, but also during the preparation at home. Commonly, we are using textured soy protein. However, the current market demand forces producers to use allergens-free proteins, like, for example, pea. And the challenge of botanical source unfortunately bring new challenges for plant-based products formulators, like, for example, different hydration ratio and speed, possible loss of the shape during the mixing, softer bite, less succulent burger, and so on. In the US, we are successfully using textured pea protein in several plant-based mince and form products. Unfortunately, at this time, we have no commercially available textured pea in our European portfolio. However, we are exploring the opportunities to operate in this area as well. So for now, we do offer wheat proteins as well as pea proteins in powder forms. And they are used as a part of so-called binding systems. What actually does it mean that? Well, it is a sort of the glue that keeps the pieces of texture proteins together, which is actually essential for burgers formations. The wheat protein mainly supports elasticity, whereas the pea protein is mainly used for nutritional purpose to enrich the protein level in the burger.
Now, Hannah, beyond the plant-based burgers, what other applications are you focusing on at the moment?
So one really interesting area for growth, we believe, is in the sliced cold cuts. Currently, the offer on the meat alternative market is still quite limited in comparison to the burgers, which we've used obviously quite a lot as an example. So clearly, it's a real lead in this particular market, which when you think about it, for the cold cuts, that's quite normal because from a flexitarian point of view, you may want to be willing to have a vegan burger for lunch or for dinner once a week. But for substituting your favourite meat-based cold cut in a sandwich, it might become a little bit more difficult, or you might not even think about doing that. So we see even mainstream consumers being more and more open to at least trying this particular product out. It's actually a perfect occasion as well for family picnic or light lunches if the weather permits, particularly not in the UK most of the time. But to have a sandwich containing protein-enriched and saturated fat-reduced sliced meat, free cold cuts is actually a growing thought in this area. Now, from a manufacturer's perspective and point of view, cold consumed bring different challenges versus the hot consumed burgers, nuggets or sausages that we've been discussing. But you can see manufacturers are certainly trying to come up with new meatless cold cut products, and we're definitely finding more and more of them on our supermarket shelves.
And what are the technical challenges involved in making these plant-based cold cuts, Susanna?
Well, there are plenty of the challenges to formulate plant-based cold cuts. Like you said, the consumer expectation is to get the visual appearance, bite, and the succulence that really resembles the original meat-based products. So again, the manufacturers will have very specific objectives about what the product should look like, how it should taste, how elastic, how juicy should be, and so on. So besides that, there are several processing challenges as well at the manufacturer side, like, for example, emulsion stability, final dough viscosity before stuffing into casing, sliceability, and also product stability during the shelf life. So in other words, the cooked meat-free sausages cannot be too brittle or too soft for slicing. Once they are sliced and they are placed on the supermarket shelves, we don't want to see any water release in the packagings, and we want to also keep the same texture over the time. So really the challenge is to achieve similar texture and eating experience like with the conventional processed meat products. Important is to find the right balance between the firmness, succulence, and the mouthfeel. It requires a multiple ingredients approach and plenty of formulations fine-tunings. And to meet all these needs, you need really various types of ingredients. Manufacturers need an ingredient panther that can support them and who knows also exactly how to combine them. And what we as a Cargill can bring to our customer is both our broad range of ingredients like plant proteins, vegetables, fats and oils, hydrocolloids, starches and blends, but also our extensive formulation experience in the meat alternative space.
Now, you mentioned a whole range of different ingredients. Can you pick a few and explain to us what these ingredients do?
Yes, for example, our starches will help to increase the yield with enhanced water and oil absorptions, water retentions, and also that add firmness to bites. Besides the traditional native starches from Vario Botanicals, we can also offer a range of functional, label-friendly starches for mild processing, and also modified starches which are for severe processing conditions, like, for example, for freezing. We also offer carrageenan solutions that provides firmness while binding water to create a juicy mouthfeel, and also aid in sliceability of the meat alternatives. However, if only carrageenans are used, sometimes it can result in brittle texture that is very difficult to slice. And therefore, we have developed blends of different ingredients with high process tolerance, with improving, for example, oil binding, upfront viscosity during the processing, adds cohesiveness to the cooked products, and hence also the succulents and reduce the purge during the shelf life. But having all these ingredients not enough. You really need to have the experience to work with them, know how do they interact with plant protein, how do they interact among each other, and then to have the facility to test the end products. Also these days, we are developing allergens-free cold cut based on Cargill pea protein with specifically designed blend of texturizing ingredients to deliver a high-quality, meat-free sliced product that consumer can enjoy without having any compromise on eating experience.
And Beatrice, what about the oil solutions that you have for cold cuts?
Yeah, actually, I'm working also together with Susanna currently that we are incorporating a little bit our palm-free product range into those cold cuts. So we're testing this product range, and this will help us then to get even closer to the processed meat products in terms of mouthfeel and texture. So we're trying our best then to come really close to the typical cold cuts that we are knowing at the moment.
So Hannah, I mean, this is a roller coaster of a world where there's so much change and consumer sort of needing different things. How do you handle the speed of innovation as a manufacturer when everything just changes so fast?
Yeah, absolutely agree, Stefan. So it's really important to keep offering a broad range of protein alternative solutions. This market is really dynamic. Innovation are successful very quickly, but also can fail fast. The retailers are expecting that new products are put onto shelves again quickly to show their success, or you can quickly be removed from the shelves if it isn't successful or it's not hitting the right point. That's why it's really important to have an ingredient partner that can be as agile as you need to be successful in this market. Consumer trends are vastly and radically on the move. In today's environment, we need to react quickly and understand challenges faced when removing these key functional ingredients that already Beatrice and Susanna have been discussing, so that we can really launch new products into the market as quickly and as fast as possible. That's one of the reasons why we've launched a new service at Cargill called Infuse by Cargill, which offers our customers a way to reformulate their products, enabling them to stay ahead by offering a blend of ingredients, working on these synergies. Again, as Beatrice and Susanna has mentioned, it's not one ingredient that will be able to bring back the functionality and the sensory aspect that we need from meat-based products when we're removing those. And by offering this approach and this way of working, we're really simplifying and speeding up customer product development time, taking that launch much quicker and making sure that the traditional innovation cycle is really speeded up.
So, Matthias, beyond texture and shelf life challenges that manufacturers are facing today, what challenges do you think will be of importance tomorrow and in the future?
Yeah, so I think, setting aside the evolution of the cultured or so-called lab-based meat, which is very unpredictable, I see the next challenges on different levels. Namely, expanding to new eating occasions and new experiences, making products more label-friendly, increased nutritional benefits, and then expanding on the sustainability aspect. So in terms of occasions, the flexitarian consumer goes to those meat alternative products a couple of times a week, but you really need to have more types of products, more occasions, so that you can grow that market even further. And I think we've spoken about things like cold cuts that are coming up and that are a way of trying to do that. I also think we're going to have more focus on side dishes, which will be interesting to again expand those occasions and expand the volume sales. I think we're going to see a lot more focus on really bringing a real culinary experience, again continuing on that texture experience, where there's going to be lots of innovation, whether it's with hybrid products where you have both animal protein as well as plant protein, so that you still allow a consumer to diminish the animal protein intake, yet have something of a meat-like texture experience. There's a lot of talk also in the industry around differences in extrusion, having the inside of the meat and the outside of the meat alternative product look differently. There's the clean label challenge. There's a couple of ingredients that are used a lot today, which consumers would rather not see on the ingredient list, most notably methyl cellulose. I think it's really the holy grail to try and replace that with some more label-friendly alternative binders. And then, there's a lot of formulations where you have lots of different ingredients being combined, but that gives you a long ingredient list, and then you've got consumers really looking for a shorter ingredient list. So those are challenges on the label-friendly front. And then related to that, it's about our nutrition. And we have in continental Europe now the introduction of the Nutri-Score by a lot of retailers, which are using on their own private label brands, but are also asking A brand manufacturers to have it on their pack. So an indication of how nutritious the product is, with a score from A being the best and E being the lesser nutritious product. And of course, that's going to draw a lot more attention to consumers about the nutrition of plant-based products, knowing that they compare it to the original real meat product, so to speak. That's not always going to work out in favor of the plant-based product. So I think we're going to see a lot of work on that, into either adding nutrition, adding protein, having a lower salt content, having a lower sugar content, etc. And then I think one of the interesting developments also to look out here is the rise of blends of different plant-based proteins that if you combine them together, you get to a better nutritional profile. I think that's also something that certainly we and others are going to be working on more in the future.
Now, this is a fascinating and exciting sector that can, it can only grow. So it's going to be extraordinary to follow what happens in the coming years. You've been listening to the Table Talk podcast, brought to you by Food Matters, and this week in partnership with Cargill. You heard from Matthias Bordeaux, Beatrice Felker, Hannah Keenan, Susanna van Beveren, and me, Stefan Gates. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for joining us. If you enjoyed this episode, you might like one of our other podcasts in which we explore pretty much every aspect of the food industry, from salmon farm sustainability to the circular food economy. Subscribe to get every episode freshly delivered to you on Apple, Spotify, Google, or your preferred podcasting platform. And to find out more, take a look at foodmatters.co.uk. Goodbye. You've been listening to the Table Talk podcast, brought to you by Food Matters. Subscribe to get every episode freshly delivered on Apple, Spotify, Google, or your preferred podcasting platform. And to find out more, please visit foodmatters.co.uk.